At least it's evening here. It's still early afternoon on the left coast, and heaven only knows what time it is in Bombay. But you know what? That's the miracle of the internets. Nothing like being global. We're joined in just a moment by Jack Thomas. Mr. Thomas is the man who coined the phrase non-normie, and he defines that as a person who is fueled by anger and controlled by hate. He came to his conclusions after a what I think could be fairly described as a life's journey, trying to work through various phases of recovery, including ongoing recovery in Al-Anon, working the 12 steps, working with his sponsor, among other things. He's worked with Alateen and run an Alateen organization in Torrance, California for 3 years. And he's worked with a codependency recovery group. And his question, or his thesis, I suppose, would be properly stated that if stored and ungrieved, this is information that was provided to me by his publicist, if stored and ungrieved, unprocessed anger was the basis for people becoming emotionally non-normal, why would they cling to it if it was destroying them psychologically? The answer Mr. Thomas found after years of probing the hidden agendas and psyches, of thousands of emotionally non-normal people that he encountered. And he, Mr. Thomas now defines various and sundry groups, peoples, philosophies, thought processes as normie versus non-normie. He has a website. I believe, Mr. Thomas, unless I am mistaken, it is nonnormie.com. Is that correct?
That's correct, Bob.
Mr. Thomas, thank you very much for taking time to join us this evening. Of course, we're discussing this evening your writings regarding the current controversy regarding remarks primarily by Bill O'Reilly and, I guess, ancillarily by Rush Limbaugh. You take the position, do you not, that they are being unfairly treated in the American media?
Yeah, yes, I do, Bob. What I think is they've been blown up out of proportion. I listened to both people, you know, in the broadcast that they did, and I listened to the entire context of it, and I really do think that it's merely a gotcha mentality with these people, that they're hanging on to a little part of it, and they're blowing it out of proportion.
Okay, let's I think that establishes the ground for our conversation. Let's back up then a little bit and talk about these definitive terms that you've developed, normie versus non-normie. Can you give us a little bit of background on that, please?
Sure, I can, Bob. And first of all, the term normie comes directly out of Alcoholics Anonymous. They refer to everyone who's outside of the program, who doesn't need the program, as a normie. And how the term non-normie came about was, I was talking to an alcoholic one time during the break, and I was asking him what the term meant, and he was explaining it to me, and I said, well, you know, I hate to tell you this, but by inference, then that makes all of us guys in here in the program non-normies. And he kind of laughed and said, I guess you're right. And the term stuck as a result of that conversation. So when I developed my program later on, after working with these people for about 18 years, you know, I always kid around. I said that I've been working with the people in AA and Al-Anon and Alateen for 1 year longer than Robert Stroud, the Birdman Alcatraz, did at Alcatraz studying canaries. And he came up with some pretty interesting research, and I think I have too. And one of the things that I found when we peeled away all the emotional layers, I don't care whether the person was addicted to alcohol or obsessions or whatever the case may be, if they were emotionally non-normal, when we peeled back the layers, we always found the same problem, and that is the storage of anger ever since youth, and usually starting in their dysfunctional family when they were about 8 years of age.
Now, you've taken that that concept of, and you've expanded it, I guess, what would we say, socioculturally?
Yeah, let me explain that real quickly. Tracking the people and the results of the dysfunction, I find that they'll do one of two things with the anger. You know, when you start storing anger, you know, the psyche, Bob, is not a bottomless pit for storing it. So what happens a lot of times, and this is one of the reasons why we have such a tremendous drug problem right now in the high schools, is they get to high school and they've got this agony that they're in from all of this stored anger. fact, one of the things we used to do in Alateen was to help them get rid of it through working the 12 steps. But those that don't, they either do one or two things. They either self-medicate, that's your alcohol, your drugs, your sex, or else they displace it in some way. And I always use the five C's, and that's the crutches, the cult, the crime, crises, and causes. And cause is the one that that I center on, you know, a lot of times in my website, because an awful lot of the people, and I'm sure you've seen them out on the picket line, you know, protesting this, that, or the other, they're very angry people, and they're displacing their rage with these icons that they've created in which to vent it on.
So, now, in this column that I have in front of me that was provided by your publicist, you make a note that polar left non-normies have mass infiltrated the major concentrations of power in America, including but not limited to the Democrat Party, the media, the public schools, psychology, the colleges, the legal profession, and especially the courts. That's a pretty broad, sweeping indictment, Mr. Thomas.
You're right, Bob, and it is very broad. I am prepared to defend it, but, you know, one of the things you remember now, it wasn't that long ago, back in the 1920s, when we just had the reverse. Polar right was in charge of this country. And, you know, you had the Ku Klux Klan parading down Pennsylvania Avenue and being applauded. You know, we had more polar rights controlling this company, country, and the ACLU, for example, was just coming into being in 1917 and was essentially, when it first started out, very tainted, you know, with communist sympathizers, and so as a result they didn't have the world's greatest reputation. And so what happened was is that the polar right eventually got castigated and marginalized out to the fringes. Now the only time you see them is out here with the skinheads and in some of the radical cult groups like the Davidian the Branch Davidian cult and things like that, but you don't see them so much in politics anymore, and you sure don't see them in the media at all.
Well, there are a million places I want to go with this conversation, Mr. Thomas.
Sure.
First of all, you listed that the courts, the schools, yada yada. Can we not also include religion in there?
Yeah, oh, absolutely, but you're going to find more polar right there than polar left.
Well, okay, so that's your distinction.
What's that?
That's your distinction, polar left versus polar right.
Yeah, exactly right. And so religion is, you know, especially in the cults or the aberrant religions, the ones that require a charismatic leader, you know, with the full devotion to, you know, the Jim Jones type.
Or a Falwell or a
right
Robertson. Yeah, that, yeah. The cult leaders.
Yes, exactly.
Okay, let me ask you this. Now, there's a statement you refer to, and I got to admit, I was taken a bit aback by this. You refer to Rush Limbaugh in your column and Bill O'Reilly as normies. Now, on the one hand, you've got Rush Limbaugh, who, under the best of circumstances, is a recovering street drug addict, and Bill O'Reilly, who, you know, in verified, documented, sworn-to court papers, tried to come on to a woman by suggesting that he wanted to use falafel to have sex with her.
Yeah, of course. That was not a proven charge. You know, that was as a sworn statement.
He settled out of court over it, and he didn't take it to trial. He didn't challenge it.
Yeah, I know, but I you know, we don't have enough information on that to really go. We have to take him on face value. And, you know, and a lot of the times, you know, when you have people, you know, that have hidden or hypocritical stances, there's no way to judge them. We base it on the face value that we see on television and everything else.
But even Rush Limbaugh admitted that he was a drug addict. How can you call him a normie?
Well, for one thing, you know, remember something. We're dealing with painkiller drugs, which are a lot different than what we're dealing with crack cocaine, you know. And so as a result of that, he got addicted to something for relieving pain. And a lot of people have that are not what you call your typical addicts. I'm not trying to defend Rush's use of drugs, believe me. I think that it's a terrible thing. But what I'm saying is that I've tested him, you know, on my non-normie test, and he comes around in the teens, and which is a good score.
Okay, well, let's go to the issue with regard to Bill O'Reilly.
Mm-hmm.
You have asserted that he was taken out of context.
Yeah, exactly. I listened to that, Rachel. Did you listen to it, by the way?
Well, as a matter of fact, I did. And I have the audio right here. So if you don't mind, let's go through it. Now, let me check real quick. It's a minute and 7 seconds long, so it won't take too awfully long, okay?
Yeah, that's okay. I've heard it about 20 times.
If you want me to pause it, just say so along the way, and I'll do it.
No problem. Go
okay, here we go.
I think it's getting better. I think black Americans are starting to think more and more for themselves. And they're getting away from the Sharptons and the Jacksons and the people trying to lead them into a race-based culture.
Okay, let's stop there for just a second, Mr. Mm-hmm. Thomas. That everyone else is focusing on the comment about Sylvia's in Harlem.
I know. Yeah.
But that front end comment is a little bit disturbing too, because when he says they're beginning to think for themselves, isn't there an assumption in there that at some point in the past, or apparently based on this conversation in the recent past, that African Americans either don't or are incapable of thinking for themselves politically?
Well, he was referring specifically to Sharpton and Jackson, and the self-appointed leadership that has so dominated the black culture right now, and there are many people throughout the country, notable people that like Walter Williams, for example, and David and Mr. Soul, who dispute that, but unfortunately they do control a lot of power, and I think that's what he was referring to in the context of his thing.
Well, I'm reminded of a printed statement that came out from Ron Paul some several years back. And this was just a light that went on for me when I heard that, where Ron Paul said that only about 5% of African Americans in this country are politically sensible.
Well, I don't put me in a position of defending Ron Paul. I certainly wouldn't do that.
Okay, but it struck me as being somewhat similar. But let's go on.
Sure.
I was trying to figure it out. Look, I can make it. If I work hard, get educated, I can make it. I was up in Harlem a few weeks ago, and I actually had dinner with Al Sharpton, who is a very, very interesting guy. And he comes on a Factor a lot, and then I treated him to dinner because he's made himself available to us, and I felt that I wanted to take him up there, and we went to Sylvia's, a very famous restaurant in Harlem. I had a great time. And all people up there, tremendously respectful. They all watched The Factor. When Sharpton and I walked in, it was like big commotion and everything, but everybody was very nice. And I couldn't get over the fact that there was no difference between Sylvia's restaurant and any other restaurant in New York City. I mean, it was exactly the same. Even though it's run by blacks, primarily black patronship, it was the same. And that's really what the society is all about now here in the USA. There's no difference. There's no difference.
Okay, I assure you, Mr. Thomas, I didn't monkey with that audio. I didn't do anything to it.
No, I believe you.
That's not out of context. Mm-hmm. That is really, really, really what he said.
Yeah, I know.
How is that not reprehensible?
Well, first of all, number one is that, consider the fact that Bill O'Reilly, goes out of his way to have black guests. He continuously has Juan Williams, Al Sharpton, and recently had Jesse Jackson on. And then consider the fact also of who is dominantly his audience. His audience is practically all white. He's speaking to whites, and there's something that was left out of this conversation, by the way, I want to insert it here. Is this story of his grandmother. Did you hear that?
Yes, I did. I didn't want to take 10 minutes running the audio, but he talks about how his grandmother was afraid of black people.
Exactly, and so what you have to do is you have to take this entire conversation in context, and he's talking to white America, and he's saying to them, in essence, all the fears that you have, all the fears like my grandmother that you have, are not real. They're in your head. And so it may sound bad, for example, to someone who is, say, taking a different position than Bill. But if you look at it in the context of his audience, it's really not as bad. And even Juan Williams said that. He asked Juan on that specifically, and Juan agreed with him.
So I understand your point. O'Reilly's demographic is high 60s, 70s, 80-year-old Americans. And it's like putting a little wet tobacco on a bee sting and trying to pull the sting out.
Yeah, he's trying to alleviate their fear.
But by the same token, then, While that may be his demographic, Mr. Thomas, the people out here who aren't part of that demographic, who aren't walking around America terrified of the Negro, can you see where that is, where it's offensive in the extreme, or condescending, or patronizing?
Well, let me give you a quote from Jesse Jackson, for example. When Jesse's not on the air and he's out speaking at high school, he talks to his black audience and he says, now, if you're on a dark street and you hear footsteps behind you and you get worried and you turn around and you see that it's white people coming up and they're holding a Bible in their hand, don't you feel a little sense of relief rather than having about three or four black guys that look like they're from the hood? And they all agree. Now, he would never say that publicly, but he's been quoted in his high school talks talking that way. Don't you think that's a little condescending?
But again, isn't he speaking to his own audience?
Yes, and so is Bill. That's what my point.
So it's so we can castigate Jesse Jackson and Bill O'Reilly equally and call them for their patronizing or condescending comments with regard to the greater picture of society as a whole.
No, I don't really believe that. See, the whole problem is we don't have enough discussion of race that's open. And if we had more of it, we would probably be a lot closer together. The trouble is whites right now, and I'm sure Bill O'Reilly's now one of them, is more and more afraid to discuss it because they get pounced on. Slightest infraction.
Is it possible that that's not a discussion that Bill O'Reilly can lead?
Well... It's got to be done somewhere, and it's got to be done everywhere. It's not like it's his job. The point is it's everybody's job. It's my job. It's your job. It's his job.
I understand your position, Mr. Thomas, but I'm having a little bit of a hard time with it. It was just like any normal restaurant, except it was run by black people, or whether it's Rush Limbaugh getting on the air on the public airwaves and telling an African American caller to call me back when you get the bone out of your nose. I'm sorry,
not familiar with that one.
Oh yes.
That's not a part of my article.
No. I'm just these are simply examples because I catalog this kind of thing. Rush Limbaugh asking why wanted posters in the post office all look like Jesse Jackson.
I have not heard any of those, but so I'd much rather stick with what I do know.
Well, sure, I understand that, but I think what I'm trying to establish is that there is a greater there's a greater spectrum or panoply, if you will, of the right-wing race comments that have a greater context. You talk about taking things out of context. This is the context in which they exist.
Yeah, but Bob, remember one thing. You don't hear the black outrage on this thing that you heard with Don Imus. Have you heard Al Sharpton, for example, out with a megaphone picketing in front of O'Reilly's studio? It's just not happening. Most of the outrage is coming from the white America.
Okay, so, and I assume that it's your position that's white liberal America.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's kind of going without saying. And so what I'm saying is that I think that white liberal America is trying to be sensitive for the blacks when they're not bothered by it as much as you think they should be.
Okay. We've got African American callers to this program, and I've gotten the emails and the.
No, I'm talking about the public personas. I'm talking about the Jesse Jacksons, the Al Sharptons, the usual suspects. That brought Don Imus down. After Media Matters. Revealed it.
And I take it that you really do have a problem with Media Matters.
Well, Media Matters, for example, the major problem I have is that they have so many distortions that I've tracked over the years. Some of the stuff is pretty good, but they do have a tendency, and I find them very anger-based, and that's the reason why I refer to them as non-normies, because all non-normies are very anger-based. This is how they displace their rage, but with going after things outside of themselves.
Well, in light of the fact that there is no outlet on terrestrial radio, we operate on the internet because, frankly, media ownership is such that a liberal progressive program cannot get a foothold in terrestrial radio. I can, as a liberal and a progressive, I understand the anger, because we have been vilified and castigated by the right-wing people like Limbaugh for going on 25 years now. I mean, you've got people like Glenn Beck, who's, and I know it's not part of the article, so, but this is just the general discussion. You've got people like Glenn Beck, who refers to Mrs. John Edwards as a prostitute, and her illness as a prostitute to Senator Edwards. The list is almost endless.
You're never going to get me defending that type of comment.
But this is the.
I don't like bad comments on either side of the aisle.
But what I'm trying to get to, Mr. Thomas, is that there is a disparity. You have identified what you define as a great deal of anger coming from an organization like Media Matters. But there's a 25-year history of anger and hate and vitriol that pours out on almost a 24-hour-a-day basis from the right wing.
Well, yeah, are you referring to Glenn Beck?
Well, whether it's Glenn Beck, it's Limbaugh, it's O'Reilly, it's Hannity.
I've never really heard Rush come from an anger base. I've heard him use a lot of sarcasm, but I haven't... I don't hear any anger. You know,
well, with regard to the phony soldiers comment, I've got the audio of that too.
When he's talking about the issues, I'm not talking about a response to an attack. You know, obviously anybody's going to be angry on that.
But he went to his website, edited his comments out so his readers wouldn't see it, and then edited the audio on his website as well. That's dishonest.
Well, I can honestly say that I have no, privilege in that particular arena. I don't know.
I take it from the sound of things that you're a fairly conservative individual. I'm a very, very liberal individual. I'm very progressive. You and I aren't screaming at each other.
No, and I'm not that type of person either.
The dialogue can be had.
Oh, yeah.
There is poison. You use the normie versus non-normie dichotomy. I just call it poison in the American body politic. And so, you know, as you look at what you identify as left-wing or non-normie anger, Mr. Thomas, I would like to hope that out of a sense of intellectual honesty and curiosity, you might go back and examine the hate and vitriol that has poured out of the right wing for 25 years.
Well, actually, I do write a lot of articles on the polar right, too, as a matter of fact. And like I say, I find most of them in religion. You know, it wasn't that long ago I was writing about our good friend, polar right Reverend Fred Phelps, up here in Westboro Baptist Church in Topeka, Kansas. And but on the other hand, I wrote about Michael Berg, the father of decapitated journalist Nick Berg. You know,
mm-hmm.
he wanted to, have a coffee and tea with the people that killed his son. You know, I mean, those are two extremes that I talk about a great deal on nonnormie.com, because you know what we're lacking in those areas is common sense, and common sense is usually where normality is.
And normality it's not subject to a concrete definition, is it?
Well. You know, the one thing that I have been able to do is I've been able to define just about everything that I do. And what I do is I say that a non-normie is an emotionally driven person. A normie is a non-emotionally driven person.
In a way, you could go back to the ancient Greek dichotomy between the Apollonians and the Dionysians then. because the Apollonians were very cold and very rational and very reasonable versus the Dionysians, who were driven by emotion, by religious fervor, that kind of thing.
The main thing, you know, here is whether which comes first, are the emotions subjugated to the brain, or is it vice versa? In fact, that's one of the things we run into in AA and Al-Anon and Alateen all the time, is we're dealing with people that got into trouble originally because their emotions were driving their entire psyche.
What happens when a rational response engenders profound emotional response?
You just hit it right there. The thinking came first, right? that's what's supposed to happen. We're supposed to be able to curb our emotions and circle them around our thinking, not the other way around.
If you just by example, and I know we run over a little bit, but I'm enjoying the conversation. I hope you are as well. When you look at something like children blown into their constituent parts in Iraq.
I'm sorry, I didn't catch that.
When you look at something like children being blown up in Iraq in bombing raids and things like that, and it appeals to you on a visceral level, and you try to respond to it rationally, reasonably, and you say, you know, that obviously this is evil.
Yeah.
This is bad.
Exactly. You know, in fact, you hit the on a point that I meant to mention earlier, if I could bring it up right now. The only cure for this is grieving. There's something, it's a lost art, you know, in society today, and we teach this in Alateen, teach the kids how to grieve their losses, because it's the reaction to loss and disappointment through anger that caused the problem to begin with. So we teach them how to grieve.
Okay, and I have got no argument with that whatsoever. The question becomes one of, however, when people who say, you know, go to a protest to protest the Iraq War because of the massive human tragedy that's involved, because it's a reasonable intellectual understanding of what has happened, and they are they're opposed by people who say you hate America, or you know, move to Iraq, or America, love it or leave it, or you don't support the troops. That engenders anger, doesn't it? I mean, it would.
Well, yes, Bob, but I'm not going to broad brush every single person on the protest line, but you know as well as I do the type of people I'm talking about within the protest. You have some very, very intellectually sound people that are not non-normies out protesting various causes. But you see, there's a difference between the person who is emotionally driven, because their thinking does not come first, it comes secondary. And when you have a conversation with them, they usually talk in bumper sticker language.
Okay. I'm on the air 3 hours a night, five nights a week, and I can tell you that I try to remain cool and rational, and there are times that I just want to shut the microphone off and weep because of the things that I see. And,
I understand.
And I can't define myself as being somehow socioculturally or psychologically aberrant for what I think is a rational response to a horrible and irrational situation.
Well, we're not here to diagnose you, Bob. That's for sure.
This is a 3 hour couch, five nights a week. I get as much from my audience as they get from me. Trust me. But Mr. Thomas, I've enjoyed our conversation. I hope you'd be comfortable coming.
I too, Bob.
I hope you'd be comfortable coming back sometime, and I wish you the very best.
Absolutely, and thank you very much for inviting me.
My pleasure, and give our best to Dale, please.
Okay, I will do that.
Okay, take care. Bye now. Jack Thomas of nonnormie.com. Wow. A couple of folks on the line here. Let's just go straight to one of them. Hi, who have I got?
Oh, hi, Bob. It's Joe Vecchio.
Hey, Joe.
Fine. How are you?
I'm okay. How about you?
Okay. Well, I just came back from job search a little while ago, so I thought I'd give you a call and see how things are going. I assume Agnes is busy with the kids.
She's being mom.
He's being mom, which is the most important thing a person can do. We're
liberals with family values, Joe. What can I say?
With exactly right. How many wives has Bill Clinton had?
That would be one.
That would be one. How many wives does Rudy Giuliani have?
I'll have to take off my shoes to get past 10. Is he on 4 or 3? I don't know.
He's on his third now. Rush Limbaugh is on his third, or did he just divorce his third? It's hard for me.
Yeah, the third was divorced, and right.
But you know, there is a real reason I called tonight, is that I have some apologies to make, and I would like to make them.
Well, I don't know that you do, but if you feel you must, you must.
Well, in light of Rush Limbaugh's apology, quote unquote, for saying about phony soldiers, I felt some apologies of my own were in order. So if it's okay with you,
okay,
I would very much like to make these apologies.
Absolutely.
And these apologies are for the following people. They're to those who gave their lives throughout this country's history for the cause of freedom, to those soldiers currently serving in combat and in support missions in Iraq, Afghanistan, and all over the world, to the people of Iraq and Afghanistan, most of whom, until we invaded, never had any animosity towards us in particular, Americans in general, and who really want nothing more out of life than to support themselves and leave a better world for their children, much like everyone else in the world, and to the future generations who will have to pay the price for the actions of the United States government, I apologize to you. I apologize to you on behalf of President George W. Bush and Vice President Richard Cheney, who are the ones primarily responsible for you being where you are today, cowardly men who decided to take us to war for reasons of their own, yet when the time came for them to sacrifice, they found better things to do. I apologize to you on behalf of the leadership of the Republican Party and their primary financial backers, who exploited your sense of duty, of loyalty, and patriotism, and used it to increase their profits or to further their own ambitions and put the success of their political party and corporations ahead of your safety and well-being. I apologize to you on behalf of the college Republicans, phony patriots who should be there fighting with you so they could learn firsthand how horrible war is and why it should never be rushed into, but who instead have chosen to let you fight their battles while they plan their futures. To quote a soldier from another war, it's their guts and your blood. I apologize to you on behalf of Rush Limbaugh, Sean Hannity, Neil Bortz, Ann Coulter, and many other media figures who have profited greatly from this war and who claim to support you and who also have never served or never had a desire to serve, or and who will ruthlessly attack even the most dedicated veterans who dare to say that you should not fight or die for their vanity. I apologize to you on behalf of the Washington Press Corps, in particular the professional media in general, who saw this war as a way to advance their own careers and therefore never challenged the real reasons for this war, whatever they may be, or the competence of those who sent you there, and who would rather distract us with stories about the assorted doings of rich, pampered celebrities than dare to admit how wrong they've been. I apologize to you on behalf of the leadership of the Democratic Party, who, for whatever reason, are doing you a disservice by capitulating to the warmongers and cheerleaders, even when they have it within their power to bring you home or to bring to justice those that wrongly sent you into war. And finally, I apologize to you on behalf of the American people, because in the end, the actions of our government are our responsibility, and we did not do enough to stop this when we could. I hope that you will find it in your hearts to forgive us, because it's we who have failed you. Sincerely, Joe Vecchio.
Bless your heart. I'm glad you've got that printed out, because that needs to go up.
Yeah, it is. It's actually on my blog right now.
Beautiful. I'm sure that
I will send it to the head-on.
Yeah, I'm sure one of the news ninjas will pick it up and put it online for you.
Yeah. So, but I felt that was important in light of, because I don't know if you heard Rush's apology.
To be honest, I didn't. No, but I'm sure it was an apology like no other, to say the least.
Exactly. So, but I felt that was very important to say, and then I wanted to let everybody know how I felt.
Good job.
I would have done a little earlier today, but I had to go out and look for a job.
Yeah, I know how that goes. I mean, any luck?
Well, I got some good leads. There's a company called Rosetta Stone that sells language software in kiosks in malls, and it doesn't sound like good, but the money's pretty good. So.
Well, great. You know,
product, so it's something I could.
And sell. You know, maybe in the course of that, you could get an employee discount on Linear A.
Sure, why not?
Or
actually, what I plan on doing is making use of the software, because according to a friend of mine who used to work there, they will allow you to have a copy of it. It's like $300 for the software. Language. It's teaching how to do different languages. And
right.
I want to have a better understanding of Japanese, because I think in the future what I'd like to do is get some sort of degree, any kind of 2-year degree perhaps, and then go to Japan and teach English. Live there and teach English.
That would be exciting. We've got a listener over there, our good friend Robert. Who does something maybe exactly that, or at least something very, very similar.
Oh, sure. And there's a good friend from the BartCop chat room named Tim Wiederquist, who sometimes comes out here to Chicago. He's got family out here, who also teaches in Japan. He says it's great. And, having lived there, I know what a wonderful country it is. And, it's peaceful, although it may not be any safer than any place else in the world, considering all the insanity that's going on.
Well, the chat room is making mention, our good friend on the road, is saying that Rosetta Stone is actually quite a good product.
Good. Well, I'm glad to hear that. I would never sell something that I didn't really support. But a friend of mine who used to work for them said it is a good product, and they're a good company, and they pay decent commissions. so I should be able to make decent money with them.
And if you've used the product, that'll make you that much a better better salesman.
That's right. That's going to be a sign. You know, here's this little short, dumpy Italian guy speaking, you know, fairly good Japanese. And I already speak a little bit. I learned survival Japanese, the important stuff. You know, where's the bathroom? How much is this? Give me all your money. You know, the important thing.
Yeah. Please don't use the samurai sword on me. Yeah.
Don't kill me today. And
right.
Take all my money. I'm only a foreigner. You know.
My mother thinks I'm a piano player in a whorehouse.
I'm sorry I didn't come in earlier to listen to what you had to say, so I don't know if I'm changing.
Well, no, I'm going to go to a call here in a minute and probably address the issue. We were just talking to a right-winger.
Okay.
And I didn't scream or anything. I was a very good boy, Joe. You'd be proud of me.
Was he a generally nice right-winger, or was he an annoying?
Well, he was genial, but he thinks Bill O'Reilly's getting a raw deal.
Bill O'Reilly is a raw deal.
Try the veal. He'll be here all week. Let's do a little program note, if you don't mind. You have taken a brief hiatus from the Cup of Joe radio show while you pursue your employment activities.
Yeah.
But that's not a permanent thing, and we will be looking for your return. And what we're going to do, we can go ahead and tell people, we're gonna do a little shuffle in the schedule. And we're going to become, for the most part, as far as live programming is concerned, a nighttime radio network.
I think that's really good.
So at some point in the future, you and John Fox will be following Peter Godbold.
Right. And I'm actually looking forward to that. You know, a daytime audience is great, and while I appreciate the fact that Internet radio is definitely going to be the future of radio, at present, morning is really still more for broadcast, so people can listen in their workplace and in their cars.
Yeah.
So I'm looking forward to an evening show where I have I can have a bit more of an audience.
Good deal. Well, Joe, chime in anytime.
No problem, Bob. I just wanted to get that apology in, and I want to let people know that. And you know, I really am. You know, it seems like it's a tongue-in-cheek thing, but I really am.
No, there was a hell of a lot of truth in what you said there.
I am sorry that these people have to go out there and you know, deal with the Iraqi summer in body armor when they have armor. And fight and die just you know, so a bunch of old white guys basically can pretend like they're old tough soldiers, you know. And it's a damn shame. It should never happen, and we should have done more to prevent it.
Yeah, it reminds that reminds me of that line from what Don Henley's The End of the Innocents, for this tired old man that we elected king.
Yeah,
he was talking about Reagan at the time, but it really hasn't changed, has it?
No, it hasn't. And you know, and in fact, thinking of another great political song for 08. You know, to me, the way things are going, it just seems to me the new boss same as the old boss, because I don't see anything changing regardless who wins in 2008.
That's kind of sad.
It is kind of sad, and that's the deal that we've gotten ourselves into. So.
All right, well, Joe, best of luck. I hope the Rosetta Stone thing works out. I think you'll dig it, I'm seeing in the chat room is any indication.
It wasn't the only place I went to today. I went several places downtown, so... I'm kicking ass, taking names, and hopefully I'll get something soon.
You know, I got to tell you, I know and I know you don't drink or anything, but there's a trend in bars toward having women bartenders. But man, you would be the classic bartender in the corner bar, especially in a place
drink.
Like Chicago. You don't have to drink. Look, you don't want the bartender drunk.
I see. So they want somebody who doesn't drink as a bartender.
Yeah, and a guy who can carry on a conversation, mix drinks, and keep the clientele drinking.
Until I start throwing glasses at the Republicans.
Well, yeah, there's that. Joe, take care, my brother.
Take care, Bob.
Bye now.
Bye-bye.
And we've got Kevin calling from D.C. Kevin, welcome to the program. Kevin? Kevin, tell me you didn't quit on me, buddy. Kevin. We've got Kevin. Oh, he's singing again. No, don't. Kevin! Oh, rat. Dog. On it. I hate it when I lose callers. Well, there you have it. Your take on Mr. Thomas? We've got about 10 minutes left or so. If you want to chime in on this, my favorite line so far is what I saw. I think our good friend Peter Godbold alluded to it in the chat room. Normal is a setting on a dryer, and that's about it. Amen. Let's see. Who have I got?
Hey, Bob.
Hey, Kevin.
Yeah, I lost you. I just dialed and hung up quick. Tell Joe, by all means, go get that degree and get out of this country and learn Japanese. Pretty much, I have that same ambition, too, you know.
Okay.
If he's out there listening, which I hope he is.
Well, I assume that you heard the biggest part of my conversation with Mr. Thomas.
Oh, yeah, and I want to comment on that, and I want to comment actually two things in the time that we have. As far as Mr. Thomas go, for one thing, I'm pretty impressed that he didn't come off like a, you know, as you would so eloquently say, like a crazy as a sprayed cockroach.
Yeah.
You know, I'm pretty, and, you know, that gives me some hope that, you know, you can have total opposite ends of the spectrum and have a civil conversation.
Oh, I'm a civil guy.
Civility has disappeared in our society over the past 20 some odd years. You know, even though I just totally disagree with him.
Right. Well, I didn't figure you were quite on the same page there in the choir.
Basically, it all boils down to...
Let me ask you real quick, because you have alluded on the program from time to time. You know, you're of African American extraction.
Yeah.
Does he have a point about that somehow O'Reilly, you know, it's not fair to criticize O'Reilly because he didn't mean to be saying it to all of America, just the terrified 60, 70, and 80 year olds in his demographic?
I just think O'Reilly is just, again, like, I would say a good portion of white America is very uncomfortable with the fact of the matter that for the past 500 years, people of color, particularly people of the African diaspora, have basically been disrespected as human beings. And the reality is, and the reason why I say disrespect, and it all comes down to that, is that our labor is not as valued in the form of the double standards that go on in the corporate, you know, in the corporate arena, and the fact that, you know, black males get 70 cents for every dollar that a white male makes on any given job. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
And other things. Look at our justice system. You know, the Genesis 6 is, you know, a prime example of that, where basically, you know, this kid, who, you know, has ginned up on racism because he comes from northern Louisiana, put nooses around the tree and, you know, did something sarcastic. Of course, in the teenage world, he can expect a butt kicking. It all boils down to that. And they're gonna, you know, put them for the full extent of the law and try them as adults.
Well, especially in light of the fact that the principal suspended the noose hangers, and then the suspension was overturned by the Board of Education, who said it was just a prank.
Yeah, and not to mention, you know, this could have all been handled by the principal. And it should have ended and began right there. He should have been the ultimate authority, but...
Well, there's... Yeah, and there's background to it, too. You know, the whole thing starts when the... African-American students go very politely to the principal and say, can we please sit under the whites-only tree?
Exactly.
At that point in time, bells and whistles and alarms and sirens and flashing lights should have gone off around the principal, at which point, maybe, you know, maybe it was his first year at Gina High School, and he says, huh? There's a whites-only tree? And that's where the principal gets a chainsaw and goes out and saws down the whites-only tree, or puts people-only under it.
Innocent tree for... stupidity of humanity.
Right, I know, but you see what I'm saying. You know, you respond to that. You don't wait for it to become a whites-only tree.
Yeah, well, that's...
Oh, by the way, Kevin, I'm getting a question out of the chat room here, and I don't know if you are or aren't. Are you the Kevin that people hear calling the Stephanie Miller Show?
No.
Okay. Okay, I just have to stay out of trouble in the chat room. Okay.
Okay. But I just feel, and here's another example. The incident that happened in at Duke University, the lacrosse team.
Sure.
Okay, had it been, the roles were reversed. Say it had been like a poor white girl with a bunch of Duke basketball team. Would they have been apologetic and ready to redeem them?
Well, there's a shade of difference, and I don't mean shade, but there's a little bit of difference in that in regard to whether they are black or white. They are high power athletes on an extremely powerful intercollegiate athletic team. They would have made bail. If, however, it was the Duke Lacrosse Club and the Duke Lacrosse Club was made up primarily of African-American young men and it was a poor white girl, you know, a male or Ewell, if you will, those guys still would not have made bail.
Exactly. And I think, you know, you got to look at the double standards across the line on any given, because, yes, you know, this country has progressed where, yes, there can be black players on the lacrosse team. Hell, my former university, City College, has a lacrosse team. And it would consider mostly people of color. You know, they're nowhere near on the level as Duke and Johns Hopkins, but the fact that Urban University has a lacrosse team is saying.
Now, when City University gets a hockey team and...
We have that, too.
Okay. Now, what I get for trying to be a smart aleck.
No, but, you know, anyhow, like me personally, I just come to the fact that, you know, I need to go back to the country of my ancestry, which is Jamaica, the West Indies, if I'm going to live as a first-class citizen. I've given up on trying to achieve that. And frankly, me personally, the Genesis 6 and whatever race issues are going in this country, technically, for me now, it's no longer my fight. You know, it really...
That is a profound statement, Kevin.
I've come to that conclusion. I don't know if I've mentioned it before, that I've seeked, because I have a lot of relatives still back home, that, you know, I'm seeking to get get a dual citizenship for now, because I feel like I still have a lot of work to do here. And, you know, the conversation you and I are having this weekend is part of it. But I'm seeking ultimately to repatriate myself and my wife, hopefully, if she chooses to join me, back in Jamaica, the country of my ancestors.
Well, you will have to hook up internet telephony when you do, Kevin, so we can continue.
I just think, you know, I've lost all hope for this country, and it's with great difficulty, because
you're not the only one. And it's for what it's worth, it's not that part is not race based, because I'm hearing from tons of people, black, white, Asian, whatever, that is their sensation, that it's over, it's done.
The experiment is over. You know, the fact that we're having an election 2 years before the actual date, you know, it's pretty much, you know.
Yeah.
It's pretty much. The fact that, you know, I really have, come to terms that I will always be a second-class citizen in this country, and regardless of whatever I say, do, or accomplish, I'm going to be considered not as intelligent.
And nothing will change it.
And nothing is going to change. You know, after my exploration throughout the Midwest, I've come to that, and I've come to that willful ignorance that I would say 75% of America wants to have.
If.
And going on that, if you'll indulge me for the next 3 minutes.
Well, I'm out of time, Kevin. Can we carry this over perhaps to a conversation tomorrow night?
Sure.
Okay, I appreciate it. I'm terribly sorry. Thank you very kindly, Kevin.
Okay.
You have a great night.
Tomorrow.
Bye now.
Bye.
And we'll try to wedge one more call in here, if indeed this is a caller who's still with us. Who have I got?
Hey, this is Chris, Bob.
Hey, Chris. A couple of minutes. Hit it and auctioneer it.
The Blackwater militia that opens fire first without questions or anything, are they non-normies?
No, they're normies who were taken out of context, Chris.
Oh, okay. I just wanted to clear that up right quick.
Jesus, I can count on you.
I've been wondering about that all day. You know, Blackwater, you know, those patriots with guns. They don't have any tea. They don't have a bay nearby, so I was just wondering.
Okay.
Saying is confusing.
I understand. We fight the confusion, Chris. You doing all right?
Remember the piece that I wrote, J.R. and I in Iraq?
Yes, I do.
Boy, do you get a sense of deja vu?
No, I would call it prophecy.
Well, I've dug that up, and I'm going to post it on the Manson Report.
Do it, and remind people of the address again, please, because I always screw it up.
TheManselReport.blogspot.com.
And that's
Mansell Report. And that's M-A-N-S-E-L.
Yeah, no two L's. TheManselReport, M-A-N-S-E-L, report.blogspot.com.
It's a 10-piece fictional piece about a buddy and I, and we're journalists in Iraq. And it is about, I call it private security forces, but obviously it's Blackwater. And it is about the very thing that Blackwater is in trouble about. And I wrote this, what, about 6 months ago?
Yeah, every bit of it.
Every bit of it. And it is, it came true. And that's what this former Navy SEAL who started this company is in, was testifying today. I don't know if you watched any of it.
No, I actually didn't. But
I got my bucket out. My eyes kept popping out of my head, but my hearing was fine. It was obscene.
See, I've reached some sort of an obscenity threshold, Chris. And I don't know. Maybe if I get a beach vacation, I can come back and watch this stuff again. But I can't right now. I just can't.
The first Republican called on to start questioning. First thing he did was turned around and said, basically, did we ask any questions like this during the Clinton administration?
I'm going to leave it at that, Chris. I got to roll
on. That's a good thing to end on right there.
Let the
God
screen.
God bless you, Kevin. I enjoyed that call.
Thank you, Chris. Thank you.
I
hope
really did.
TheMansellReport.blogspot.com. Go read.
It'll be up there in about 15 minutes.
Good job. Good job.
All
thanks,
righty.
Chris.
Take care.
Bye now.
Love to Agnes.
Thanks. Yeah, remember, a vibrator in Alabama is obscene, but hired guns in Iraq gunning down innocent civilians isn't. Like I said, I'm suffering just a little bit of an obscenity overload. You know what I mean? So that's it. Thanks, everybody. I hope you enjoyed what we had for you this evening. And I enjoyed your emails, your commentary in the chat room, your phone calls. It's just another night where I get to enjoy it all. And I thank you all very much. Thanks to John Fox, our chief engineer. Thanks to Ben Birch, the hardest working man in liberal talk at WhiteRoseSociety.org. If you value what the horn does, you value what Ben Birch does. And always, 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 RMR, Gina, it's all for you.
This is the Quality News Network. Washington lawmakers consider a House bill that would require President Bush to show a concrete plan for the withdrawal of U.S. troops from Iraq. The bill does not set a timetable for pulling troops out, and Republican leaders say they won't oppose it. The head of private security contractor Blackwater defended his staff before a House Oversight and Government Reform Committee today. He told the committee they acted appropriately at all times. His testimony comes as the FBI investigation continues into a Blackwater shootout last month in Iraq that killed 11. A Washington Post ABC News poll shows only about 25% of Americans support the administration's $190 billion war funding request. British Prime Minister Gordon Brown is visiting Iraq for the first time. He's meeting with authorities to discuss a drawdown of Britain's 5,000 troops in southern Iraq. That would have 1,000 of them home by Christmas. Violence in Iraq declined, according to a report out yesterday, but a UN report out today finds that attacks in Afghanistan have risen by 20%. They are now at the highest level since the 2001 U.S.-led invasion. For only the second time in 50 years, the leaders of South and North Korea met today for peace talks, talks centered on Pyongyang's nuclear weaponry program and its shutdown. A United Nations envoy left Myanmar after finally being allowed to meet with the country's leader. No progress, though, was reported in swaying the regime from a brutal government crackdown on a peaceful pro-democracy movement. In Islamabad, opposition lawmakers resigned today, protesting Pakistani President General Pervez Musharraf's bid for a second 5-year term. Other candidates for the office also took their course to the country's case to the country's Supreme Court, asking that... This is the Quality News Network. A meeting between the junta chief of Myanmar and a UN envoy ended today without a clear decision if the violence in the capital city will end soon, but witnesses say slightly fewer troops were on the streets of Yangon today. The head of Blackwater Security is rejecting charges that his staff was out of order when they opened fire in a crowded square, killing 11 Iraqis. Blackwater is being investigated by the House Oversight and Government Reform Committee. Washington lawmakers are taking up legislation today requiring President Bush to show a concrete plan for a withdrawal of troops from Iraq. A Washington Post ABC News poll shows only about 25% of Americans support the administration's $190 billion war funding request, while 70% want the proposed allocation reduced. British Prime Minister Gordon Brown is visiting Iraq for the first time. He's meeting with authorities to discuss a drawdown of Britain's 5,000 troops in Iraq's southern province of Basra, 1,000 of them by Christmas. For only the second time in 50 years, the leaders of South and North Korea met today for peace talks. At the top of their agenda, Pyongyang's dismantlement of its nuclear weaponry program. In Canada, a federal judge acquitted 3 doctors, a Red Cross official, and a U.S. drug maker of criminally infecting Canadians with AIDS and hepatitis C contaminated blood. More than 3,000 Canadians died of the tainted blood in the late 1980s and early 1990s. The Canadian government has awarded $1 billion to the victims' families. Several press groups have filed suit against the federal government asking that the investigation into the collapse of Utah's Crandall Canyon coal mine be made public. 6 miners and 3 rescuers were killed in the August mining accident. Madison Square Garden and its chairman were ordered to pay over $11 million to former New York Knicks executive Anucha Brown Sanders. Sanders sued the company for sexual harassment by Knicks coach Isaiah Thomas. In Minnesota, opening arguments begin today in the first trial of a consumer accused of copyright violation for illegally sharing songs on a file-sharing network. You're listening to the Quality News Network. We have science and business news coming up next. Now this.
Did you know 1 billion adults around the world cannot read? 2/3 are women, many prohibited from learning. The rate of illiteracy is declining, but the number who can't read has been increasing. These are more than just numbers, they're people. They're your friends, neighbors, and even your family. Consider these numbers. In America, if you didn't speak English in your home, you're 44% more likely to be reading below the most basic level. If you didn't complete high school, the chances are good that you can't read. 85% of prisoners are illiterate, as are the kids who wind up in juvenile court. Here are the facts. If you can read, you can learn, get a better job, and make more money. If you can't read, you can't learn, you can't find a good job, you can't make a decent living. Choose smart. Learn to read. If you're out of school, find a literacy program through your local library.
This message on literacy has been brought to you as a public service by the Quality News Network. For more information, please contact your local library.
A hurricane team at Colorado State University increased its estimate of the number of tropical storms in the 2007 Atlantic hurricane season. Forecasters say the 2007 season will have 17 storms instead of 15. They predict there will be a total of 7 hurricanes this year.
According to a report by the Associated Press, lab accidents involving deadly viruses, poisonous chemicals, and contaminated animals are on the rise. The number of laboratories approved to handle deadly substances has doubled in the last 3 years. Nokia will pay $8.1 billion to acquire digital map maker Navtech. Navtech's maps are used primarily in automobile navigation systems. eBay announced it will take a $1.43 billion charge as the result of its acquisition of internet phone company Skype. In addition, Skype's CEO will leave his active position. Home sales hit a record low in August, according to the National Association of Realtors. Many would-be home buyers are having difficulty getting loans, and economists say the housing market shows no signs of improving soon. Gold is trading down at this hour at $17.80. Light sweet crude oil is trading down at $80.05 a barrel. And on Wall Street today, the Dow Jones is down 43.65. The NASDAQ is up 6 points, and the S&P 500 is flat. You're listening to the Quality News Network.
And now, from Washington, the Inside Scoop. All the news the government does not want you to hear. Now, here's your host on the Inside Scoop, Mark Levine.
Good afternoon, America. Welcome to the Inside Scoop. I have titled today's show, The Fine Wine of Clarence Thomas. I hope you caught that it is not the fine wine of Clarence Thomas, the fine wine of Clarence Thomas. The man does give a fine wine. It is a top-of-the-line wine, and it's a man who continues to whine throughout his existence. Clarence Thomas, of course, is whining, W-H-I-N-I-N-G, in his new book, My Grandfather's Son, which he got paid $1.5 million. And as Robert, a blogger, has pointed out on my blog, he is one of the very, very few sitting Supreme Court justices ever to write a book. He wants to know if there's some rule against it. No, apparently there is no rule against it, none other than sort of basic decency. Most Supreme Court justices don't write about themselves while they're on the court. Of course, I guess he plans to die in office, so he'll have no time to write the book. But Clarence Thomas's complaint is that he isn't respected, that black people call him an Uncle Tom. That's not just a play on his name, Clarence Thomas, but because they feel he has sold out. He is a person who received affirmative action and yet wants to pull the ladder up and deny affirmative action to other African Americans. By the way, speaking of Tom and Thomas, there's another Thomas coming on the air, a guy by the name of Jack Thomas coming on Bob Kincaid's show after I'm through today. Jack Thomas is a right-winger, and he claims that liberals are unfairly attacking poor, poor Bill O'Reilly, the man who himself learned to his shocking surprise that